One of the things that I've noticed of late is this sense that the left, this is mostly about the left, they can't seem to understand the word no from a social point of view. So you want to feel like that you're a woman when you're really a man? Who are we to say no to you? You said so? Okay. There's no pushback by saying no. That's crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, that's just not it. Now they're even talking about obesity, like the idea of, well, that's just a disease that you kind of acquire. It's like the cold. You wouldn't blame somebody for having the cold. And why would you blame somebody for having obesity or being overweight? It's a disorder, if you will.
Yeah.
And so, but the pushback would be, no, you're eating too much. That's what it is.
Right.
Right? Same thing with just about anything else. You feel like being angry? Be angry, because who are we to say no to control your emotions?
Right.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to interfere with your flow. Yeah. There's so many. And then there's a drug addiction now, where they say he can't help himself, right? We need to respect that somehow. And alcoholism, a little less so, oddly enough. But still, the flow of society today is to not say no.
Yeah.
You do you, whatever it is, we understand it. You want to rape and pillage in a country near you? Well, it's understandable.
Yeah.
Because of all the rage you must be feeling. Right, it's weird. Same thing with Black Lives Matter during 2020 and the riots and everything else. Right, we have to understand them. No, it's wrong. It doesn't matter what your justification is. It doesn't matter how angry you are. You can't start, looting and destroying property.
Right.
And as far as looting is concerned, forget about BLM. Now with people stealing from CVS and otherwise, anything under $950, at least in California, who are we to tell them not to do that?
Right.
Nobody's saying no anymore. And that's something that kind of dawned on me. There's no pushback.
Right.
And it reminds me of all these parents, some of whom I know, who have no ability to say no to their children because they're worried about not being loved, or that they'll somehow frustrate them, or they'll suffer PTSD. You just say no to these kids. It's a very weird phenomenon. I think that's what's going on. That's the theme of today. I'm going to start with podcast now, where we're going to have a theme in the beginning of every podcast. It's what I used to do my radio show, by the way. But what do you think? I mean, does that make sense? Am I missing a beat here?
No, it's absolutely true. Like, we indulge everything that will just ruin society. We'll just make society. And like with alcoholism, like, you become honest and you actually are very active. With heroin, you just sit there in a corner. And they would prefer you on heroin, just sitting in a corner. You get out of our way. Don't tell us what you think. But like, it's the diseases that come, the comorbidities that come with being obese are so high. And it also is like, that was the last time I was on a plane. I'm next to two very big people who were very much like flowing into my, and there's no personal space, and it's just horrible.
Well, and nobody says no, speaking about that, on an airplane, if you're obese and you're demanding that you now have two seats, nobody's going to say no. I mean, they're afraid to say no.
Right.
Like, well, no, you're too large, sir. Oh, are you calling me fat? Well, you said that you're a plus size person and that this is a disease. I'm simply recognizing your disease, sir. Well,
right.
But at the same time, you're supposed to tell them that they're not fat. It's weird. Yeah. Here's another thing where people don't say no. The idea that you can have your truth and I can have mine, right? No, there is only one truth.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where we've gotten. So again, it's like the parents who are afraid to discipline their kids. There's a point where you have to say no. Dad, can I have these donuts right here, even though I've already had 15 before? Like, no, son, that's it. That's enough. Come with me. We're going home. And then they have a rant. Then they have a temper tantrum. And the temptation for a lot of parents is, okay, fine, here you go. Just be quiet. Don't do anything. Aren't we doing that now as a society at large regarding all of our citizenry? if you want to look at the kind of social, structure and with the social media and everything, everything is about, I'm okay, you're okay, you do what you need to do. Yeah. It's a funky dynamic, right? It's this inability to say no.
Right.
Anyway, an observation. And this leads right into the next topic, the main topic of the Israel-Hamas war. And the Biden administration, and many people are afraid to say no to the terrorism. They're saying that what they did was somehow understandable. Right. We need to understand their history of occupation and everything, which is all BS, of course, but and apartheid and the suffering that they've done and the genocide that's going on. So it's okay if they did what they do. And there are many of them, a lot more than there are Jews and Israelis. And so we kowtow to them because we're afraid of them. And they'll shut down the professors. And there's another no thing going on. All these demonstrations on campus, the universities are unable to say no to these school students, because the campus students, because, you know, that's what they want.
Right.
And so they agree with them. And so they just, whatever you say, students, I guess we'll do what you want and we'll agree with you.
Yeah,
Israel is an apartheid country. Israel is a genocidal country.
And this is the Cultural Revolution in China. This is exactly what they did. They would literally beat professors and control it. And then once the Chinese communism got its way, guess what happened to all those kids who did that? They went into the camps and they're never seen again because they're easily taken care of. It's not good for the students to do it because if the regime wins, whatever they're trying to pull in, their life is over once they participate in that.
So here's a speech. You may have heard this before. Biden is making a speech, and there are protesters against Israel. And so he responds to them. He gives them voice. Yeah. And this is exactly, it's such a good example. I was going to just talk about this as part of the Israel-Hamas war and how America is responding to it. But it dovetails so beautiful with what we're saying about no. Yeah. All right, so listen to this. You're gonna die because it's so weird.
Of Americans now oppose Israel's military action in Gaza. On Tuesday, President Biden acknowledged pro-Palestinian protesters who interrupted his speech in North Carolina. Let's listen.
They have a point. We need to get a lot more care into Gaza.
Okay, so it's interesting because that's not the first time he said that. They have a point. He realizes, or he hopes, that I will somehow resonate more with people listening, and it will somehow mollify the pro-Palestinian side. So they have a point. People are clapping. And you could tell he was ready with that answer. If they heckle, say they have a point. Right? So again, the inability to say no.
Right.
And to push back on them saying, listen, this is we're talking about whatever, inflation or Bidenomics or a thing. This is not the right time to talk about that. Right. And to simply arrest these hecklers and push them out and be done with it.
Right.
Right? But instead he appeases them. And you can expect that more and more. And appeasement seems to be the order of the day, because we have now the UN is just recently decided to have an abstention, the UN to have a condemnation of Israel and to seek a ceasefire, demand a ceasefire of the Israel-Hamas war. And that's the way it's going to be. Okay. And so America, for the first time, I believe, when it comes to an Israel situation, abstains from the vote.
Oh, man.
That's what England used to do. And it was England abstained for the vote for Israel when it was first created. America was the first vote for Israel. Now it's actually abstaining from, we could talk all day long about what do you want? I mean, you want them to sit back and let Hamas grow? You're deciding how to prosecute the war for Israel? Yeah. But that means that they're buying all the crap, the genocide crap, the apartheid crap, the occupation crap, the Nakba crap, which means the catastrophe.
Yeah.
It's really quite remarkable. And they just kowtow. Now, why do they do that? Because they're afraid of losing votes in Minnesota and Michigan, particularly because there's a very strong pro-Palestinian region there. There are Muslims all over America, of course, but they're particularly concentrated in those two states. And they got a wake-up call when there was a primary and Tlaib, yeah, encouraged the Muslim vote, or in fact, everyone to vote non-committal, uncommitted in Michigan. And she got 100,000 people to do so. And that is a remarkable number, and I think that terrified Biden. Right. The problem with Biden is that he's got two girlfriends, yeah, and you can't if the two girlfriends find out about each other, what happens? Right. They both say bye bye, we don't need your two-timing face.
Right.
Okay, neither of them are gonna demand. I mean, I guess if they're psychotic or they've got some sort of psychological issue, one will fight for for him to be 100%. But he's a two-timer.
Right.
So you want everyone to love you from the Muslim world, or the pro-Palestinian world, I should say more specifically, because not all Muslims are pro-Palestinian.
Right.
But you want all the pro-Palestinian votes, and you want the Jewish pro-Israel votes. I got some news for you. You have to pick a lane.
Yeah.
You cannot have both of them. And if you do try to have both of them, like those two girlfriends, you will lose both of them.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. I mean, one of my very lefty friends said, isn't that ironic? And he's pro-Israel. And he says, isn't it ironic that Biden might lose votes because he's pro-Israel on the conservative side? And isn't that? And I said, no, don't be impressed with that. He's trying to have it all. And in the process, he's losing it all. So he's not just losing votes in the pro-Palestinian side. He's losing votes on the pro-Israel side.
Right.
Because he's doing this dance that everyone can see is just a dance. So that's what happens when you try to be everything to everybody. Pick a lane.
Right.
Decide who you're in favor of. I want you to be in favor of Israel, as you should be. But if you want to win vote, if you want to win one of the entire blocks, you have to pick a lane.
Yeah.
Isn't that simple, right?
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, what's that song, Torn Between Two Lovers? You know that song? I think it came out in the 70s. Torn Between Two Lovers, feeling like a fool. No, it doesn't resonate. No. That's the theme for Biden.
Yeah.
Torn Between Two Lovers. Anyway, very shocking. And Kamala Harris now, she also feels that it's a good thing to abstain. She supported the UN vote. She calls upon Israel to cease fire. This woman could very well be our president. If not this year somehow, because Biden resigns or steps to the side or whatever. God forbid if Biden wins. She apparently is his running mate still.
Right.
And she might easily be the president. Because I can't imagine Biden lasting more than a year from now, just right, mentally, from a mental capacity point of view. So who would take over? Kamala Harris.
Oh, God.
This idiot. She's an idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, Biden is just not there. But once upon a time, you could say that he has some cognitive abilities. And I mean, he was always wrong.
Right.
Always. There's not a single thing he did right, at least when it came to foreign policy. But at least there was some sort of method to his madness. But Kamala Harris, you won't know. She'll be a kite in the wind without any string attached at all, just moving wherever it goes.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. Very weird.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So, there's a great video from Bill Maher. And Bill Maher spoke to the issue of Israel. And he very cogently, and this is very recently, cogently explained the situation between Israel and the concept of the country Palestine.
Yeah.
Right now, there is no Palestine.
Yeah.
Okay, never was a Palestine. There was a region that people loosely called Palestine. There was British Mandate Palestine, for example. The Romans, after they kicked out a lot of the Israelites in the year 70 AD,
yeah,
renamed Israel Palestine, which is the Latin word for Philistine,
right,
in order as an insult to the Jews that they were just kicking out. But there were no Philistines there. And then there were a couple of Bedouins for thousands of years, but Jews came back all the time.
Right.
And Jews were occupied by the Ottoman Empire, by the Babylonians, by the Romans, of course, and ultimately the very last occupiers were the British.
Right.
But take a listen from what Bill Maher says, because I think he says it very cogently.
I would submit that Israel did not steal anybody's land. This is another thing I've heard in the last couple of weeks, words like occupiers and colonizers and apartheid, which I don't think people understand the history there. Yeah. The Jews have been in that area of the world since about 1200 B.C., way before the first Muslim or Arab walked the earth, 1,000 years before. I mean, Jerusalem was their capital. Okay, so if it's just about who got there first, it's not even close. There have been a continuous Jewish presence. Yes, the Jews were the ones who were occupied by everybody. The Romans took over at some point, and then the Persians and the Byzantines and then the Ottomans. So, yes, there was colonization going on there. Beginning in the 20th, 19th century, they started to return to Palestine, which was never an Arab country. There was never a country called Palestine that was a distinct Arab country. And, yes, there was a problem there because there was two people who wanted to share the land, which is why the UN in 1947 said, okay, we're going to partition it.
So that's good. I mean, one thing he didn't add is after the Ottoman Empire was the British Empire.
Right.
But you know, it's okay. I mean, he was just doing it from memory. But, until 1948, when Israel was recognized as a sovereign nation, again, by the Jews.
Right.
You know, of the Jews, rather, returning to their, not only their native land, but also as Jews with their culture, the same culture that they had 2,000 years earlier, with the same language.
Right.
It's really an amazing, it's the first time those three things ever happened, that people actually returned to their native homeland.
Yeah.
In history. I mean, it's amazing. Right. With the same culture, with the same language, which had been revived
right.
from the dead.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's as if somehow the Romans were able to go back to Italy, kick out the present Italians, who are not necessarily Roman at all.
Yeah.
And not only that, but keep their old Etruscan / Roman ways
right.
and all their traditions and start speaking Latin.
Yeah.
It's just amazing when you think about it, right?
It is insane.
It's insane. And Latin makes it's actually easier because Latin was constantly taught in the schools. So it's not as if they forgot how Latin grammar works or anything else. They didn't have to rebuild it. Hebrew had to be rebuilt.
Wow.
Even though they taught it in the synagogues, but they had to do a lot of, you know, it's like gene splicing and what they did in Jurassic Park, right? In order to get, they didn't have the full genes, so they had to kind of borrow from frogs and everything else.
Right.
Hebrew is a little bit like that. Because how do you, there was no word for airplane
right.
in Hebrew. There was no, right? Yeah. Or telephone or yeah. automobile and so on. And then even some other things like abstract thought, like ideology.
Right.
Was not, it's a Greek word. So we had to use it in Hebrew.
Yeah.
The word absolute, words like that didn't exist.
Wow.
It's a Greek concept. A lot of abstract ideas had to be brought back in. Anyway,
right.
I digress. The point is that Bill Maher does a great job here. He really explains it very well. So this fanciful notion that somehow there was a people that have been ousted, that they've been robbed of their country. There's so many things wrong about that. And to the in the 1948 war, and Bill Maher goes on later on to explain how Israel was originally partitioned in a certain way, and the Israelis said, sure, that's fine. And if you were to look at the map, and Bill Maher presents it, you would say, wow, that's a really small map.
Right.
And some of it was not even contiguous.
Right.
But it was understood that this would be Israel. And Israel said, even though this is very difficult for us, we'll do it. We just want the land so much. Right. We'll take it. But the Arabs surrounding didn't like it, and they decided to just destroy it all. And then in the process, they lost a lot of land.
Yeah.
Because they try to slide. That's the way it works, honey.
Yeah.
You know, you try to kill people, then you lose the land.
Right.
But that land was never yours to begin with. It was not a Palestine. It belonged to Jordan. It belonged to Egypt. That's it. And Lebanon in the north, and Syria in the northeast. They don't get it. Anyway, so here we are. And during those wars, the Arab countries surrounding, I don't know if you know this, they told their Arab brothers and sisters in Israel,
yeah,
get out now, and when we, and let us do the slaughter of the Jews, and then we'll bring you back in. Jeez. And so a lot of these Arabs said, okay, fine, that sounds cool to me,
right,
only to lose the war and now suddenly find themselves out. But the Israelis didn't push them out, it was the Arabs who did.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah. And the thing that I think is, like, with Bill Maher talking about this and, like, the whole thing about Biden talking about Palestine, October 7th, I don't think, is talked about enough. And they quickly change the subject. It's like, no, we're pro-Palestine. No, they're so justified. And they're all right. They're justified in doing what now? What do you support? What horror? Like, it's a very clear side to say you're on. Either you're against October 7th or you're in favor of it. Like, you cannot be neutral on that subject. No, like, no matter if it's like the Houthis and the Tutsis or something like that, you still cannot be. One side does that, I'm sorry, you got to be the other team. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, you got that rock solid. So another interesting story that's related to this is, well, I don't know if it's really related to it, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Everything's
related one way or the other. Well, so Jill Biden, in a speech, says that what's happening in Florida in terms of the laws that they're advancing, the latest law being you cannot have a social media account if you're 14 or younger,
right,
which I think is fantastic. What a great idea.
Wonderful.
Plus, they ban transgender surgeries, yes, for anyone under 18. I think that's the idea.
That's,
but that, you see, is cause to believe that Florida is like Nazi Germany. You see?
Yeah.
And just like Nazi Germany killed the Jews, well,
the
it's
opposite way.
Yeah, it's weird. That was my segue. What are you going to, yeah, do? Okay, so listen to what Jill Biden says in a speech in a fundraiser. Listen to what she says. She's comparing the prohibition of sexually explicit content in schools to Nazi Germany. Okay? So this is fascinating.
History teaches us that democracies don't disappear overnight. They disappear slowly, subtly, silently.
Okay, wait a minute. I always think it's so funny. History teaches us this, right? America was the first democracy.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, we think about it. I mean, yes, Athens, Greece. But she talks as though democracies were all over the place, you know, since the year zero. And they come and go, these democracies, and history teaches us that they come, you know, they dissolve silently and slowly, right?
Yeah.
Well, how so? She gives us no examples whatsoever, but she wants us to think that that's happening.
Yeah.
So then she's going to talk about Nazi Germany because, you know, that was a democracy ostensibly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from the Weimar Republic to Hitler's Germany. Okay, that's the one example, but that's all she has to go on.
Right.
So, but she talks about democracies, right? Okay, let's continue on.
A book ban, a court decision, a don't say gay law.
That is so outrageous. Don't say, right? I mean, she wants to have some data points. I get that, but she loses all credibility when she mischaracterizes that law that said you can't teach this crap to the schools and characterizes it as you're not allowed to say the word gay.
Right.
And nowhere does the word gay or homosexual even appear in that bill, certainly, let alone a restricting mention of it.
Right.
Here you go.
Before World War II, I'm told, Berlin was the center of LGBTQ culture in Europe. one group of people loses their rights, and then another, and then another.
Because as you know, when you think about the Nazis and what they did, the first thing that comes to mind is LGBTQ.
Right.
Oh, what's that you say? You say something about the Jews?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Is that a part of it?
I guess it was something. Yeah, yeah, it's a small, yeah, small part of it. But they're not real. The real war was against the LGBTQ.
Yeah.
You didn't know that, did you? No. Well, I'm learning all the time.
Yeah, and they I'm pretty sure the Nazis also took away our gun rights. And also I think they took away our right to protest, or like the Germans' right to protest January 6th. I don't know. I'm just throwing out there that maybe there are some themes with the Nazis.
Little censorship here and there, yeah, telling you what's misinformation, what's not.
Yeah.
But you digress, don't you? You know, it's like, it's crazy. So let's hear this idiot continue to speak. And she really is idiotic.
Yeah, she is.
Until one morning you wake up and you no longer live in a democracy.
Well, I guess when I woke up this morning, I realized I was no longer living in a democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just because it's all about the LGBTQ.
Right.
Didn't mention a single word about Jews, nor did she mention any specifics here about the book banning, the alleged book banning, right? No, it's about prohibiting sexually explicit content to young children.
Right.
And we have to explain this. It's utter nonsense, but it only goes to show that the big lie still lives.
Yeah.
Right? That is, and they constantly say it, and I see it on Facebook. They gobble it up without any digging underneath, that there is an effort to ban abortion and to arrest women and doctors, that they want to kill transgendered people, that they're suffering, and then, of course, that they're banning books.
Yeah.
None of these things are true, just none. But they will say it over and over again.
Yeah.
It's a shame on them. But and Jill, the thing is, Jill Biden knows it. She knows she's lying.
Yeah.
It's one thing to see a certain set of facts and say, look, I mean, for example, on the abortion issues, to say, I think it's a woman's body to do it as she will. Okay, I can understand it. I completely disagree with it, but it's not a lie. Okay.
Right.
But what she said here was pure lie.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
All right, so going to the Trump's recent, the bond decision that came down. This is very interesting. And there's a little thing with this appellate decision that effectively reversed the bond requirement by reducing it from, I think it was like $460 million, which is, I think it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You seem to think that, oh, it's not a lot of money, but I think it's a lot of money. Yeah. Anyway, they reduced it to $175 million. Which is much more manageable for Trump to do. I don't think it's easy, but manageable.
Right.
And he, but the appellate decision reversing it also reversed the lower court's order prohibiting Trump and his family from running the Trump Corporation. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah,
which is great. That's a huge win for the Trump family.
Right.
Because now you don't have a receiver, you know, deciding what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
They get to run. And what's going to happen, it will be reversed.
Yeah.
Because that's a big signal by the appellate court to say, I don't think that you've got a good case here. But we will chop it in half, literally in half. They're splitting the baby for now.
Right.
But we're also reversing the decision, what you just said, about not letting them run the company. That it is wildly beyond imagination. I'd be... At this point, I'd be surprised if the appellate court did not entirely reverse the Engeron's decision, because there was no fraud proven, there was no victim, no plaintiff, and there are no damages.
Yeah.
But you know, as we said, other than that, it was a solid, rock solid case.
And the dispute was factual. Like, he did a directed judgment, like...
Right.
The judge is supposed to do like the law decisions, and he's like, no, the fact-based decision.
Right. Oh, and one of the things I was saying is that when he granted summary judgment, if you know that that's what you meant by directed verdict, summary judgment, if you know procedural law, this is true for every state. When a judge grants summary judgment in the middle of a case, oftentimes it's the whole case, it is the easiest way to get reversed on appeal. Yeah. Because you're saying there is no issue of fact for a judge, for a jury to decide.
Right.
So you are robbing the fact finder, whether it's a judge or a jury, from determining what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And there could be nothing more factual, in my opinion, than whether or not the appraisals were out of bounds right. or not. It's a subjective thing. I think it was worth $18 million, or I think that's what Mar-a-Lago was, for example, one of the properties. And they say, no, it was worth only, what, $6 million? I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But whatever. But that's an issue of fact.
Right.
It's an issue of laws where is whether or not let's say the complaint was filed 6 years after the breach of contract, and it's a 4-year statute.
Right.
Okay, it's a matter of law that it's beyond the statute of limitations.
Right.
That's a decision based on a law. Anyway, that's the easiest way to get reversed on appeal.
Yeah.
And that was stupid of Engeron to do that. He should have gone all the way to the end of trial and said, oh, let's reserve it, and then make all of his crazy findings. Then he could say that he decided it using his discretion
right.
at trial.
Yeah.
And when it's much harder to appeal a decision after trial than it is after summary judgment.
Right.
I know it's kind of a funky distinction there, but just trust me, that this was it was stupid on his part to issue a summary judgment right. because it just makes that much easier to reverse him. Okay, that's the bond decision. This decision Monday also puts a stay on the part of the original judgment that barred Trump from serving as a public officer. Yeah, I just mentioned that. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And now it only inures to the benefit of Trump. Then also take into account the new case kind of decision in the classified documents case.
Yeah.
The judge ruled in that case while she was ruling it, saying this is kept on saying over and over again, this is it smacks of selective enforcement. There was some sort of, arbitrary was a word used quite often.
Yeah.
Very interesting, right? Okay. So, but you really want to talk about, the RFK situation.
RFK.
Am I right? You wanted to talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Always.
So what's happening is that the Democrats have suddenly woken up and discovered that RFK is becoming a big thorn in their side because more people are likely to move away from the Democrat Party to vote for RFK than from the Republican Party. So it's more of a drain on the Democrats. And that, look, it's already difficult enough for Biden to prevail against Trump, but I think they suddenly woke up to this issue. They see it as an issue. It was very quiet for all this time.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, they're very hot to trot about this RFK guy. It's like they're discovering, you've got high blood pressure and you got to do something about it now. Like, whoops, but you've been ignoring it all the time.
Or like a leak in the roof or something.
Or the goiter in your neck.
Or a tax bill that just keeps on getting larger with interest. Or
the check engine light in your car that you just do nothing about.
Or even just that rattling in the car.
Oh, yeah. Or ignoring the gas gauge that indicates it's empty. You're just keep on going.
Or even just a tingling just on your left side down your arm.
Oh, yeah. It's nothing. Or the uncle who keeps on asking you for larger and larger amounts of money while sniffing through his nose. I'm sure it's okay. It's no big deal. Everything's going to be okay. Or maybe like the jury summons that you keep on ignoring. Oh, man, it's so funny. That's what RFK has become like, and I think that they're going to get a big, big rude awakening about this, and he's getting some momentum.
Yeah.
Now, his choice for the VP is a former Google executive who's uber liberal, uber lefty, super progressive.
Yeah.
So, to the extent that he wanted to get somebody moderate, he failed. Okay, this is nobody is going to vote for him if they know anything about this woman,
right.
Who's going to be his VP pick. And now they must be even more worried, the Democrats, because it only means that more Democrats will move to RFK.
Right.
And then at the same time, RFK says, oh, I'm concerned that I might be giving the election to Trump. You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. So drop out.
And she also, like, she was married to, like, that Google, one of the founders of Google. She divorced him. RFK's campaign is pretty much funded right now. If she wants to, he doesn't need to ask for money. He can just go at it.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's a great point. All right, let's get to the real meat of the situation. What we're all here for.
Yeah.
What's happening with Diddy or Sean Combs, right? Oh, man. He is in a big world of hurt. I can't. These accusations are wildly off, you know, never mind all the stuff that they're finding and the videos that he himself put up. I mean, he's like Hamas, you know, when you think about it. Hamas videoed everything, and then they say, oh, we didn't rape anybody. Wait, you took the videos yourself and uploaded them on Facebook. I mean, he didn't do that. He didn't upload anything, but they're all there. Oh, man. And then the FBI raided both his Florida and California homes.
Not a good sign.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good. And there's all sorts of accusations, and you just know that a lot of it is going to come out to be true. I mean, there's no way that he's going to come out of this clean. Plus the fact that he appears to have fled the country to the Caribbean on his private jet. So that's usually a bad sign also.
Yeah.
It could have been just a coincidence. I get it. I understand. Very fair. But I don't think that's the case. he's in a world of hurt.
Oh, that's not a good thing.
But, you know, so as usual, when I hear stories like this, I'm really fascinated by the mindset of such a person. Does this person believe in God? Right? I mean, look, correlations are not causation. I know that. You know, correlation, you can say that traffic jams and sunsets are correlated, but that doesn't mean that traffic jams cause sunsets or vice versa, right?
Right.
So fair enough. But it does seem that all these wackadoodles, these people who engage in these fantastical crimes, such as also the guy who was just sentenced. What was the name? Sam Bankman-Friedman. Bankman-Fried. He was sentenced to 25 years for a massive fraud upon investors. You check his history and his religion, his faith. No, nothing there. He's just, you know, do what you want sort of attitude.
Right.
I'm not saying that he's an atheist. I'm not even maligning atheists. But I am saying that when you don't have a moral center that you can understand as your moral grounding, instead of just saying, well, I'll just do what feels right for the moment,
right,
then you're going to do crazy things like that. You will justify crazy things like that. In a sense, Sam Bankman-Friedman, Bankman-Fried?
Yeah, Bankman-Fried.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah. And Diddy, they're very similar people.
Right.
Not in the specific crimes they committed, as far as I know. Bankman-Fried didn't do any sexual stuff like that. Maybe he did on some parties, but nothing on the order of Diddy. But their hubris, their thinking that, and their self-rationalizing, I think that they're the same.
Yeah,
I get to do this because I'm a great person. I have a lot of money and a lot of power, and people think I'm awesome. I'm an Ubermensch.
Yeah,
I'm a Superman, to use the Nietzschean phrase. I think that's what's going on with that guy, right? And it turns out Diddy, and I looked this up. Check this out.
Yeah.
This is from Wikipedia. In 2008, he told the Daily Telegraph that he does not adhere to any specific religious denomination. He said, I just follow right from wrong. So I could pray in a synagogue or a mosque or a church. I believe there's only one God, but doesn't specify. Okay, yeah. So you think, okay, well, hey, there you go. He believes in God.
Right.
Not so fast.
No.
Okay? He doesn't really. When you talk like that, you don't believe in God.
Right.
Okay? On July 3rd, 2020, Combs invited his Twitter followers to view a three-hour YouTube video posted by Louis Farrakhan.
No.
In the video, Farrakhan made multiple comments and repeatedly used the phrase, synagogue of Satan. Okay? The video was removed from YouTube for violating the policy against hate speech. That's against Jews. In response to comedian Nick Cannon being fired on July 14, 2020 from Viacom CBS for espousing anti-Semitic views, Combs tweeted that Cannon should, quote, come home to Revolt TV, unquote, saying, quote, we got your back and love you and what you have done for the culture, unquote. So that's it. So in other words, he's anti-Semitic. And generally speaking, anti-Semites don't know anything about God, certainly not the Judeo-Christian God. Yeah. This man, it doesn't really believe in God. And by the way, saying that you believe in one God and lots of stuff, that doesn't mean that you believe in God. Some people say these things as cover.
Right.
I mean, yeah. we talked about this recently where, yeah. You know, a lot of the priests who molested the children, it certainly is awful.
Yeah.
Is it a blight on the Catholic Church? Yes, but only in the sense that the Catholic Church failed to respond instantly to these accusations. And that is definitely a black eye on the church. No doubt about it. But does that mean that Christians tend to engage in sexual deviancy like that? Yeah. No. It means that sexual deviance gravitate toward the church because it gives them the semblance of cover.
Right.
It's an opportunity. And then and this is what evil people do. They take advantage of it. That's what con men do.
Right.
That's so crazy. Anyway, Sean Combs, may you rot in hell. I think that bad things are going to be revealed soon enough. He'll have the best lawyers, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
But good luck to you, man. Good luck to you. I think you'll get whatever's coming to you. Yeah. It turns out there was a lot of underage stuff, a lot of forced sex. And apparently he was videoing a lot of other people there who were doing bad stuff themselves. And unbeknownst to them, they were being videoed. So he's got a lot of... it's going to be one cluster, you know what.
Yeah.
Bad stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I know that you were very, very upset about Ron McDaniel getting fired from NBC.
Such a beautiful hot...
It was... it's okay. I mean, her looks should have nothing to do with it, and they don't. But what a funny thing this NBC... Talk about censorship.
Yeah.
They, on the one hand, claim to embrace democracy and free speech and everything else. But as soon as they actually have a real conservative, and she is, I mean, maybe she wasn't a good RNC chairperson. I get that.
Right.
Maybe she wasn't effective. I get that. But she comes on, has a contract with NBC, and then there's a revolt from within, from the staff. They don't want anybody. They just want to hear themselves talk.
Right.
This is a big difference between MSNBC, at least, and Fox News.
Right.
Fox has liberals there all the time, and they argue well. It's not just puppet liberals.
Right.
I'm talking about real liberals that know what they're saying. They speak the issues. They have very good presence of mind. They argue the issues as a liberal would do very thoroughly, and you get a good sense of what the liberal position is. So not so with MSNBC, apparently. And they tout themselves being so excited about this. I wish I had the montage that I saw the other day. From Rachel Maddow on down, they say, this is a glorious day, getting rid of this woman. We need to applaud MSNBC's higher-ups for doing the right thing. Isn't that funky? Isn't it amazing that they forget what free speech really means and what journalism is supposed to mean?
Yeah.
They totally forgot that.
Right. Yeah. Or they're scared of it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Or they're scared of it because the truth, if you start telling the truth, they have no position. They have no argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is very true. So I guess we'll leave with this last point, which I think is fascinating, that 320,000 illegal immigrants had been flown in on a program. I'm not saying it's secret. Apparently it wasn't secret. But from Nicaragua, Honduras, and Guatemala, and many other countries. So that they're actually flying over the border.
Yeah.
And then we're depositing them in this or that city throughout America.
Right.
320,000 in the span of a year.
Yeah.
As if we don't have enough people coming illegally on their own.
Right.
We have to help them. Right? But the good news is they're paying their own way. Yeah.
How?
Yeah, it's not taxpayer expense. So don't worry.
Right.
Well, of course, why does that mean anything? The government is paying for their food stamps and for their all sorts of, and their education, their health care, and getting $5,000 credit cards and such, or what do you call it, debit cards.
Yeah.
cell phones and everything else. So don't worry. They're getting covered one way or the other.
Right.
It is breathtaking how they pretend that they, first of all, that they don't know anything. It's like that Supertramp album, you know, Crisis What Crisis.
Yeah.
Right? And then they try to make you believe that they're not purposefully doing this.
Right.
As if somehow, oh my gosh, I would love to stop the border and seal up the border. But what can I do? I'm just one man. Yeah. Yeah, you're the man that can actually stop this.
Right.
And apparently you're one man who can not only, you supposedly can't do anything on the border, but you can send in the federal troops to cut the barbed wire on the border right. that the Texas border guards are putting up. That you can do.
You can sue.
And you can sue. Oh, you're really good about that. But everything else, I can't do a thing. So, no, you can't have it both ways. But that look, they're heading over a cliff, the Democrats. And I just look, as we speak, 7.5 months before the election,
yeah,
things are looking good for Trump in terms of his popularity. They are running against the clock. They are, you know, they're hoping, like a James Bond movie, right? You're like, right. Can they get him in prison before November 5, 2024? Yeah, dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see the countdown on the bomb about to explode. And if they get him in prison, then the world has been saved,
yeah.
Right? And they may find out that the bomb is not going to go off after all.
Yeah.
Like, oops, like, run.
Yeah.
So Trump's, none of these cases will actually go to trial. The Alvin Bragg case, it's a nonsense case.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. And even if it does get quote unquote convicted of anything there, a violation. It's not going to be serving time of any kind. So they've got the other three to focus on, and all of those are garbage cases as well.
Yeah.
Nothing will go forward, before November 5. And after November 5, as my law partner properly brought up, he made a very good point. He said, look, if Biden does win in November 5, you think they're really going to have the energy or interest in actually seeing Trump go to jail at that point?
No.
You know, because he's not going to run again.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2028.
No.
We know that. So they could say, okay, you know what? Forget about it. And Biden can be even so generous and pardon Trump.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think these things are going to happen. You'll see. All right, my friends. Brock Lehrer signing off, saying God bless, and we'll talk with you next week.